for Lickin' On Lending.
Welcome, everybody. Good to have you with us.
Welcome to Lickin' On Lending, a weekly mortgage market update providing up-to-the-minute information on interest rates, loan programs, and hot industry news, all related to the mortgage industry. Brought to you by Transformational Mortgage Solutions. Now, here's your host of Lickin' On Lending, David Lickin.
Let's begin.
Listeners, I'm excited to share with you today a podcast with someone I've recently gotten to know. It's another gray hair in the business. So much fun to run into someone like this. His name is Bob Simpson. He started a successful mortgage fraud investigation company back in 1997. And he also then in 2008 was the largest mortgage fraud investigation company in the United States. You know what, folks? We got a lot of increase in fraud right now because when volumes goes down, fraud goes up. Bob has become a certified anti-money laundering specialist, a lawyer, a former loan officer. This guy knows our industry and he has his finger on what's going on. His recent business is Daylight AML. We're going to have him talk to us about the business. But Bob, I just want to welcome you to the podcast and our audience. Thank you so much, sir.
David, very gracious. Thanks for having me.
Yeah. First of all, I want to credit David Kittle for introducing us. David is such a good friend at TMC. And then you were at the TMC conference in Louisville, and you and I got to meet in person there. And that was a real treat.
Great conference. They put on a great event.
It was a great event, great conference, but it was just such a joy to meet you. And it's an old guy like me meeting another old guy that's been in the business for a while. I mean, I got you by a few years, but the reality is you just have done so well. And I didn't realize this, but I'm reading over your bio. You also were featured with Scott Pelley, who I also have gotten to know. Scott and I have mutual friends. So you've got a number of media claims to your name and some successful businesses. So we're looking forward to having you on.
Yeah, I was pleased to know that to him as well. He's quite the guy.
He is really funny. Scott Pelley's story is we were at a barbecue here in Texas, and Scott and his wife were sitting here at dinner and with this other mutual friend that we have. And he's standing in line and getting some food, and someone walks up to him. I'm standing next to him. He goes, "Man, does anyone tell you that you look a lot like Scott Pelley?" And he goes, "Yeah, I get that a lot." He's just so humble. He didn't come out and says, "Yeah, I'm him." And just the way he was, I love high profile people that are really humble like that. And I'm really interested in getting our audience to get to know you and what you've done. So tell us a little bit about your background and your journey to where you're at today.
Yeah, I wear a bunch of hats through the course of my career. I was a loan officer for 10 years. I'm one of those old guys that still knows what an HP 12C is. Everything's done in your LOS these days, but I shop for a car and I'm still bringing out the HP 12C. About 10 years of origination gave me all the origination stories I needed to then join a law firm in Southern California, specifically to help them litigate mortgage fraud cases. And I didn't know much about complaints or demurs or being a lawyer when I joined this law firm, but I knew how to analyze fraud files. So we had all these frauds and I would gear up the litigators telling them this document shouldn't be there. This signature shouldn't match this signature. And I'd give them everything that they needed for the depots. But being an entrepreneurial sort, in 97, I decided to start my own company, iMark. And we were working largely with the mortgage insurance companies on loan fraud, on misreps in their files, and the fallout from those misreps. And they go up to investors and insurance coverage, and it implicates your relationships with third parties. Things get messy when there's fraud in the files.
Yeah, so very true. Lenders are expected to have adequate Bank Secrecy Act and anti-money laundering program in place. What are the key components that you would say that our listeners need to know about having that in their programs? What should, and then also, what should a mortgage loan originator know about this?
Good questions. All the establishment of adequate BSA program applies to mortgage lenders since 2012.
I'm going to say for those that say BSA, what's that mean? Again, that's Bank Secrecy Act.
Secrecy Act. And AML, I get so used to saying it, is money laundering, anti-money laundering.
Anti-money laundering, yeah, AML.
So this officer inside of banks and mortgage companies that gets appointed to have this duty of administering the program is generally called the BSA officer. And their responsibility is to assess risks and employ policies and procedures to meet those risks. Train internally, conduct audits, file the SARs. These all end up on the BSA officer's desk. And they say that risk assessment is one of the pillars, but I think it's the key. I think it's so important for mortgage lenders to get a hold of their risks. And for us, sure, it's money laundering hits mortgages and real estate. A lot of money flows around. So the prospect of money laundering is huge. But fraud falls under this category of things that has to get reported. So the BSA officer is there, they're trying to assess risks and put their policies in place. But if they find fraud, they've got to report up to FinCEN. They've got to actually say we found an attempt to commit fraud or one that was successful. Wow. So that's where that fraud background of mine
right
dovetails so nicely with the anti-money laundering business, because I bring this expertise of fraud analysis to the BSA officer.
Yeah. So what about the MLO? Why should they care about this? Mortgage loan originator.
Having been an originator, I can tell you that sometimes the unethical, and it can make your life difficult. People propose that they're going to use their VA to buy a beach house that they'll move to in 3 years. And you have to explain to them as the loan officer, I'm sorry that your veterans benefits are for owner occupied and you can't buy a beach house that you're going to move into 3 years from now. Those are small little things. And then you end up with the big stuff, which is maybe builders or real estate agents proposing just outright fraud or money laundering. And that happens not infrequently.
Define money laundering inside the more subtle aspects of money laundering that people might not be aware is, in fact, money laundering.
So it pops up in so many places that you wouldn't expect. It's here about being charged with bank fraud, mail fraud, wire fraud. Wire fraud covers a host of sins. Money laundering does too. There was a prominent mortgage banker who had been very successful, ran into some difficulty and started siphoning money away from his company, making some pretty bad decisions. Instead of cutting staff, he just was juggling. And he juggled a bunch of money right into his own accounts. And one of the charges that he pled to was money laundering. But you think, I've got an executive who went rogue and he wired himself a bunch of money that wasn't his. What is that? Well, it's money laundering. You're trying to take money that you've gotten illicitly and you're trying to make it look clean. So the money laundering itself is one of the frauds that has to get reported to FinCEN, which is the division within Treasury that is our enforcement arm. It's a repository of fraud reports. It's not really an enforcement arm so much. I think of it as a library of suspicious activity reports.
I remember that. Isn't that where all SAR reports, suspicious activity reports go into FinCEN? FinCEN, again,
they're
is
all
short
filed
for...
there. Financial Intelligence Unit?
Yeah.
FIU?
FIU. Okay. So yeah. All right, good.
Everybody's got one. All non-rogue countries have an FIU that collects these reports. And there's a international organization, the FATF, that is the sort of international effort to coordinate these FIUs and make sure everybody knows where everybody else's money is. So it's an international problem and we are an important player in it. And mortgage companies, banks, credit unions that make mortgage loans have responsibilities to report their suspicious activity.
Yeah. You've already gotten into a little bit of it, but when people think of money laundering, they think of bags of cash. But you've covered a couple areas. I'd love to get a little bit deeper into how does money laundering find its way into the real estate transactions and specifically mortgages beyond what we've already talked about. Can you give us some more examples, Bob?
Yeah, let me give you two examples. I had an investigation that we were conducting that involved gift funds. And a pretty substantial amount of gift funds that were being used by a young buyer to purchase a property. But gift funds were coming from 8 different sources, all with various ethnic back last names. Didn't appear that anybody was related. And it was over $100,000 worth of gifts.
Wow.
And you look at that and you say, man, I got a bunch of money coming in. We're going to buy real estate with it. And if we really dug, I think we're going to find these people aren't related. Unfortunately, this loan got funded because the underwriters checked the box. We have a gift letter. We have the verification of funds. And in it came, and we funded this loan. That's one way, gift funds. The other way, I'm sure you can appreciate, is if I wanted to launder a bunch of money, I might buy a junky piece of property for 100 grand and spend 150 fixing it up, blow out some walls, expand the floor plan, do the landscaping, add everything I need to it, sell it for 250. It is not hard to find contractors who will work for cash. So if I go in and for 100 grand buy a house, 6 months later sell it for 250, I'm up, and as soon as that wire hits my account, that's clean money. It's just gone to the wind and clean. It's my wire from a successful real estate transaction. And then I say, what would you do if that person, instead of selling the property, came to you for a cash out refinance? Yeah, that one doesn't feel as good. Now I'm giving my cash to somebody who's laundering it. These are the kind of just bells and whistles that go off when you're attuned to that subject. We often don't think, how did we improve this property from 100 to 150? Sometimes it merits digging.
Yeah, and I think that's one that, quite honestly, I had not thought of, because it's an easy one to step fall prey to, that particular one. We all know about KYC, or know your customer, that process by which we come to know who we are working with. What special risks do mortgage lenders confront when attempting to assess risk?
That KYC issue is, I think, the core of the BSA officer's job.
Okay.
And so picture a loan officer in the field. They might be getting pushed. I remember personally getting pushed. I was very pleased. I was pleased to get a referral to originate a $800,000 purchase loan, 20% down. And it was the owner of a art gallery. And so I took the application. Client was happy. I was happy. And then I asked where the $160,000 down payment was coming from. And they said, that's none of your business. We have the money. You don't need to know. And I did my charming best to explain the rules and how they have to tell me where the down payment's coming from. No go. And now the realtor is very upset with me because I'm hassling his client, and he pulls the loan, and we say a little more creative with his documents sometimes. And then this realtor started spreading the word that I didn't know how to originate, and that if I did, I could have closed this easy loan. Now I've got a bad reputation inside of this real estate office because Richard isn't happy that I was hassling his client. All right, so we dodged a bullet. Now look at what a classic money laundering thing this is. I've got $160,000 of unsourced cash coming in to buy a house. And frankly, from an art gallery, that's prime money laundering potential there. But now the next time that Richard, the real estate agent, refers us a loan, are we going to check it? Are we going to do a little more diligence on it? Has he established himself as a referral source that shouldn't be trusted? I don't have the answer to that. I'm not sure we're going to get any more money or any more business out of Richard. But I raise the issue because our world of know your customer is more than just the loan officers and the brokers and correspondents. It ripples out. It ripples out to the builders who use us and the realtors who send us business. And I worry when we have a drastic slowdown as we've had here, people still have car payments to make and people have got to close deals. We are a commission business. Our realtors are builders. So wisdom says, if you're assessing your risk, maybe in the mortgage world, you're touching a little further than required. You're one circle out in the pond further than you actually need to be legally.
Yeah, that one story where you bring up where you passed on it and dodged a bullet. The next guy, unfortunately, got hit with it. And you suffered some reputational risk on that. When did that realtor ever come back and say, oh my gosh, you were so right, Bob? Yeah, that just doesn't happen. You're still the idiot that couldn't get that simple transaction.
No, I can assure you that never happened. I never got the card and the apology.
I think that's one of the things a lot of people face that, but the consequences. To what extent would, if you had yielded to pressure and gone ahead and funded that loan, to what extent does that then come over in on you as a loan originator? This is an important point, listeners. Listen to this. This is really important. So
there's a line. There is the casual misrep that we all know happens in lending. And some of this can be addressed with training. let's make sure we train people so that you don't do these small things. Here's a jarring one to the ear of anybody. Go to any cocktail party and say, did you help your kid buy a house? And almost always the response is, yeah, I loaned him 20 grand. I told him to pay me back when he sells the house. It's not what we do in the lending industry. We make them sign a gift letter that says there's no obligation to repay. We all live with this fiction. We all live with it. It's just part of the origination world.
Right, right.
But that is a country mile from committing the kind of fraud where you're creating asset docs, creating employment docs, and out of whole cloth, creating borrowers. One, you can probably train around. And the other, I think you need to fire people, and it's an HR problem. So you've got this division. If you're running, if you're a responsible owner, you're trying to be understanding about all the ins and outs of loan origination, while at the same time realizing you might have people that you need to let go.
That's a great point. You ran one of the largest fraud investigation companies in the U.S. for quite a few years. What are some insights from that experience that you might share and pass along to our listeners?
I think that what in files that turn into trouble needs to be handled with some sophistication. Let me tell you what I mean by that. We would see, I'll call it relative sophistication. Sometimes you see an unsophisticated borrower with kind of a sophisticated fraud in the file, and you know that the borrower probably wasn't involved in this. Then you see certain fact patterns where the loan officers, the originators, are working with somebody to get the loans. Let me give you put some structure around this. We had a file that went into default, and we checked, and it was a truck driver, and we checked the tax returns, and this guy was driving a big rig, and he had a Schedule C for his driving. He had about $35,000 in income, but he had $50,000 in depreciation that was added back to his income. You know that funny thing we do in lending where you take your depreciation and just give it to somebody as part of their income, right? So you go from $35,000 to $85,000 in income, and all of a sudden this guy's a homeowner. We pulled loans from this broker, and we found a really disturbing pattern. We found 10 truck driver loans, all with the same CPA, and every single one of them had a $50,000 add back for depreciation, and even 50 too, not even 51. Everybody had a $50,000 add back. So you went from $30,000, you went from $40,000, knocked that up by $50,000, and now you're a homeowner. So we see a problem. And so now you've got HR issues. Now you got somebody who's coordinating with a CPA. You have things to unravel here that affect your employment, continued employment. These are suspicious activities that got to get reported. So in the analysis, you may find things in a sophisticated analysis. You may find things that implicate people's employment and an undeniable kind of, yeah, you were involved in this, and here's how we know.
There's borrower fraud. There's also fraud that goes into money laundering, fraud that goes into the capitalization of mortgage companies. And when you look at that, we narrowly dodged a bullet with that. And one of my second mortgage company that I was a partner in, I was president and CEO and partner of, we badly needed cash because we were outstripped our leverage ratios because of the amount of cash we had. We needed just parked money just to be able to get more warehouse facilities. And none of us had the ability. We were using all the money to run the business. We didn't have money to go in. So we had to go out and get an investor to come in, and an individual showed up. Turned out that individual was a criminal and was using money that he had done other things with. Thank God one of my board of directors was one of the most, he just didn't like it. He said, this doesn't feel right. This doesn't smell right. And we finally dug deep enough and we found out the rest of the story with this individual. And unfortunately, had stolen $25 million, had gone to prison for it. They never did find the money. And he was then coming around and putting $5 million investments in five different mortgage companies. It was money laundering, the money that he had stolen, and he had it back out. He had already put it in four companies. We're the fifth company he was trying to put it in. And thank God I had a board of director who just said, Dave, this doesn't feel right. I'm not authorizing us to bring this in until we do a deeper investigation. Thank God.
I think it's a marvelous story. I think that's the intuition to feel that and to make a call on that. I call it time on the water. Yeah. If you can read the wind and the waves, you've spent some time on a boat, right? It's a part of your intuition on things. I had a similar experience. I went to a raw origination seminar out in Palm Springs, and there was a panel of four top producers out there, and they're all putting up huge numbers where each one of them has a couple, three, four processors just to handle their work. Yeah. All the guys that make mortal producers feel bad. It's those guys. This one kid, he's 24 and he's right out of USC. And he says, yeah, I believe in myself. I maxed out my credit cards to get the great suits and I leased the big Mercedes. And in a year, I had all the business locked up in San Diego, coastal San Diego. And I'm sitting there with a couple of mortal producers, friends of mine. And I go, does this make any sense to you? Can you roll into La Jolla and lock up all the business in La Jolla as a kid? It's like, nah, son doesn't feel right. And our intuition said this is wrong. And 6 months later, sure enough, the FBI swooped in there, picked him up, his files. He was doing that thing we know they do, which is funding all the tough loans and getting everything closed. But it was all just junk. It was all just fraud. And it was that same intuition that you're talking about that said, hang on, my experience, this is not right. So we got to tap the brakes on this.
And we were in such need of capital. So it's not like that we were wanting to go out and do something nefarious. We were looking for clean capital. We didn't know that we'd accidentally, in fact, what's really ironic about it, one of our warehouse facilities recommended we talk to this person. So it was one of our lenders, which was a financial institution, that first in. When they found out that what we had dug up, they were, needless to say, it was a big embarrassment for them. But unfortunately, it did cost four other companies, and the CEOs got arrested for money laundering and implicated in this whole thing. So there comes a point where we're all needing things and we are so susceptible to doing this. I'm just so interested in what you're doing, and it's so important that this message come out, especially at this particular time. Board members and senior management can have personal fines levied against them, is what I'm understanding from what you told me. What advice, Bob, would you give anyone listening who sits on a board of a mortgage lender or serves on the executive committee of a mortgage lender, anyone that could be implicated or have fines levied against them? First of all, who are they? Number one. Number two is, what advice do you have for them? What levels?
Let's start with their goal. Their goal is to run a good company and not get fined. Nobody wants to get fined. Nobody wants to have headlines. They're trying to run a good company. So what do? You appoint a good BSA officer. They don't have to be a certified anti-money laundering specialist, but they're savvy. They've got war stories. They know the business, right? You appoint a good BSA officer. You have them train. You stay informed. As a board member, you get informed on what the current frauds are. What's the current risk? What's going on out there? Is it wire fraud? Is it identity theft? Get informed. Really learn. And in this realm that we live in, if it's not written down, it doesn't exist. So get your training and make sure you got a record of your training, because you can't say I read a book. It's, you got to document your training. And then when I read the consent orders of people who've been fined individually and corporate, they're all available online. There's just a long list of adjectives that are used to describe the bad management, and they really inattentive, ineffectual, dilatory responses to remediation. It's very insulting. You would not want to be on the receiving end of one of these orders, because it's almost like they're fining people who just showed they just didn't care. Year one, they had a remediation they should have taken care of. Year two, they didn't. Year three, finally, they get fined for it. So take your duties seriously. Act on the remediation, get informed, appoint good people, and then just stay on top of your company risks. And I really think you pointed out you needed money for your company. You need it. And that can color your view.
Yes, it did.
We need origination right now. We need loans right now. Are you going to just have your view colored because some guy over here is a big producer? Well, are you looking at that? Are you looking at that production over there? Let me give you one example, and this is a board level example. The loan program was construction to perm, and it's a great product. Everybody loves to build their dream house, and you get the construction loan and it rolls into the perm. There was this felon, this guy who wanted to build a bunch of homes, but he couldn't get financing. So what he did was he enlisted a bunch of straw buyers. David, just say you're going to build your dream house. Give me the money. I'll build the house. I'll pay you 10 grand just for signing up for the loan. Don't worry. I'll market the house. This guy He built about 35 homes, all borrowed in, David, your name, and Tom and Harry, and all borrowed in other people's names. And when it got to the board's attention, their question was like, how did this happen? How did we end up with, you know, millions of dollars of financing out there? None of it was owner occupied. And we're all just funding a builder who had a long list of felonies. So that's the advice for the board, is be aware of the products that you offer. Be aware of how they might get abused by builders, felons, others who want to launder cash. Stay informed on it.
Yeah. A lot of companies are downsizing right now, Bob. We're not out hiring anyone to go out and do that kind of work right now. I mean, that we just, if that's a function that oftentimes BSA officer is being laid off right now because we can't afford them. They're viewed as a luxury or something we can't afford. Do you do this as a contract service? Can you be a contractor, BSA officer?
I educate and I train internally. I train on SAR preparation, for example. Okay. I know that stresses people out. You're writing a narrative to the feds. I'm not a good writer. How do I describe a fraud? I train on SARs. I've got templates and people can help themselves create a solid product, because that's certainly an important part of a BSA compliance program. Yeah, costs are to be considered across the board, but the responsibility to run this and still protect the company is still there. It's got to be an adequate program, given the geographic footprint and given the type of loans that somebody does.
I'm thinking so many companies out there. There's a lot of new startup companies that don't have a budget for this. What would you say to someone who says, I find it interesting, but Bob, I don't have a budget to do this? It's like saying, I don't have a budget for having homeowners insurance or car insurance. It's just dangerous, you know, not to have this to a degree. Bob, for those that are starting up a company or having to reduce staff and they don't have a budget for a BSA officer, what would you say to them and how they can mitigate this risk? Obviously, they can get your training through Daylight AML, which you have. And by the way, folks, we're going to put the links to Bob's website, daylightaml.com. You can go in there and get the training. But what would you say to those that are just really on a tight budget right now? How do they manage this?
Give the job to somebody internally. You can appoint other people. You can appoint your head of quality control to be your BSA officer. You can appoint somebody to train, to stay on top of, to file the SARs, to do all the jobs of a BSA officer. It does not need to be its own position. It's not an additional $100,000 hire. The job has to be done, and the word is adequately. So make sure that they've got the education, they got the classes that they need to take, but it doesn't need to be an independent position. They can have other duties within the company.
Yeah. So you can assign almost anybody to do this. It would be great to have a compliance officer. I think there'd be good alignment from that standpoint. Or are there any people that you would say, no, this person should not? Where's the conflict at?
When you talk to people who have been dealing with fraud for a long time, they have a different view of fraud and money laundering than people who have been in the positive positions, like underwriting, trying to get loans through. People who have been dealing with the backside of our lending industry and all the problems might have the war stories to look with a jaundiced eye on some files and go, yeah, we need to dig here. And sometimes the new hires can sometimes say things like, oh, that person wouldn't commit fraud. And now fill in the blank with your favorite virtuous profession, teacher, fireman, cop, priest. That's the sign of somebody who's new in this. You don't say they would never have fraud.
Interesting. Bob, how can people learn more about this topic and the services you provide?
You can check out daylightaml.com. We've got a YouTube channel. We've got information there about our BSA AML compliance work and the courses that you can take there. And my contact information will be there. I'd be pleased to talk to anybody who wants to ask questions about it.
Good. Thank you so much for joining us, Bob. Really impressed with this service. And it's a good wake-up call. I'm so glad you reached out to me because, again, we're in a season where, sadly, this kind of thing is on the increase, on the rise. So we need to be
ever more. Great talk, David. Thank you very much.
It's good to have you here. Thank you.
Thanks. Talk to you soon.
Hey, listeners, this hot topic would not be possible without our sponsors. I want to say a special thank you to our sponsors, Finastra, Byte Software, Lender Homepage, Angel AI, Truv, the Mortgage Bankers Association of America, Lenders One, the Mortgage Collaborative, Modix, Mobility MMI, and Knowledge Group. There's so many good sponsors here, and we're so grateful for each one of them. Be sure to check out each of those sponsors and their spots on our website, Lickin' on Lending, under the sponsorship page. Thank you.
You've been listening to Lickin' on Lending, a weekly mortgage market update with your host, David Lickin of Transformational Mortgage Solutions. Join us next week, and thanks for listening.